Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM. I am Michael Elves, and joined from a safe distance by my pal Brian Svensson.
Hey, hi, howdy.
No Chris Zook as of yet, but our special guest is here. We teased it last week. Brian's mom, Diane Svensson, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, mom. Happy to have you on. Yeah, this is good. Brian gets to talk to his mom on the social distance radio. This week, we are rewatching Rookie of the Year, and the central team in the movie is the Cubs, and that's why we've got Brian's mom on to talk. She's a Cubs fan. So let's talk about how you ended up becoming a Cubs fan. Like, at what point this is, especially because this is an older movie. Were you a fan around 1993?
I was, actually. I've been a Cubs fan since 1984. And my love of baseball goes back even further than that. My senior year in high school, we had a couple of teachers that organized a bus trip to Minneapolis to go watch a ball game. And we got to see the Twins beat the Brewers. It was in their old outdoor park that they had before the Metrodome. And I liked baseball ever since then. And then in 1984, I moved into an apartment that had satellite TV. And one of the channels we got was WGN.
Mm.
And back then, all the Cubs home games were day games because they didn't have lights at Wrigley Field. I worked a late shift, and I would be able to watch the afternoon games.
Nice. Yeah, I think there's like a pocket of like Cubs and Atlanta fans because of like Peachtree and WGN being available.
I do remember, Mom, you used to say also that around that time you were able, on really cloudy days when you were up at your cabin, that you were able to catch Cubs radio broadcasts as well.
Yeah, our cabin was north of Riverton, and our entertainment at the time, because we didn't have TV up there, was radio, and we would fiddle with the dial and just pick up different stations from all over. And one of the ones that we went to catch was WGN Radio, that we could listen to games there too.
Nice. Yeah, I love when you like on a nice day and you can catch like an AM signal from like Tennessee and catch like a Titans game or something. It's one of the most fascinating things to just kind of scroll through the dial. So 84. So then you'd been a fan for 9 years by the time this movie rolls around. And I mean, this is obviously, you know, they're playing on the sad sack nature of the Cubs at this point in this movie. You know, how difficult was it to root for the Cubs during that like stretch when they were kind of laughable losers in some sense?
Well, and that's all we could do really was laugh at the time. yeah, just nod your head and go, yeah, they lost again. Their time will come. It was just being the butt of a joke, really, is what it was. But
funny thing was is that the 93 Cubs weren't even all that bad. I mean, they finished fourth in a really, really strong division, but they did win 84 games.
They did, yeah. They didn't do too bad that year. It was 93 was also the first year after they'd lost Greg Maddux to the Braves, and he won the Cy Young that year with the Braves. So
yeah, I think somewhere I still have a Donruss Maddux Cubs card kicking around. So then obviously, like, fast forward, did you ever think that the Cubs would win as they ended up doing? Like, was that in the recesses of your mind, was that a possibility?
Yeah, the previous year they had made it to the playoffs, because that was the beginning of the core that they have, that they had. They got John Lester, they had Jake Arrieta, they had really good pitching. They had Anthony Rizzo and Bryant, and you know, they were building on that, and they became that really good team. A couple of years before that, my husband and I had gone to Chicago for me to pay homage to Wrigley Field, and we actually got to see Hendricks's first game since coming up from the minors, and like we could see right away how good he was, and my husband at the time said he's going to be a great pitcher.
I remember that he came home, and the first thing he said to me is like, hey, you gotta pick this guy up in fantasy now. This guy is going to be really, really good for a long time. You need to pick him up now.
That was evident from his first start.
So I think one of the like charms of this movie is that they did film it at Wrigley, right? That like they didn't cheat the footage and use a different ballpark, because I mean, really, Wrigley is such an iconic and distinct ballpark. So I do want to kind of get into talking about Rookie of the Year. And one of the things I appreciated was that, you know, even though they're not using like real players in a lot of it, they are using the actual ballpark. And I think one of the charms of the Cubs is that ballpark.
Oh, so definitely.
For you getting to go to Wrigley then, like, I have to imagine that's like kind of a pilgrimage of sorts for a Cub fan.
It was. Yeah, I was emotional when I was there.
It's really funny because I actually beat you to Wrigley.
You did.
Only by a couple of months, but you guys went in what? I beat you by a year. You guys went in 2012, and I was there in 2011, just kind of offhandedly. I was there to actually watch an indie wrestling gig, and I ended up just wandering over to Wrigley, and there was a guy that was like, yeah, I got bleacher tickets for like $7. And I was like, yeah, please. So I went and watched, six innings of a Cubs game before it got rained out, but I beat you there by a year.
Yeah. But looking at the film, it's definitely, you can obviously identify it as Wrigley in that film, and they had filmed it there in September and October of the previous year. So in 92 was when they had filmed it, and there was some of the scenes that they filmed in between a doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some of the other scenes that they filmed in October, but they had all the fans in the stands, because they basically had to wait until the Cubs were finished with the stadium. All the fans in the stands had to dress like it was in July.
Which would have sucked in Chicago in October.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Although speaking of those fans, one of the first notes I made, so the opening game of the season is Cubs Giants, but there's a kid in Marlins gear in the in the crowd shots?
Precursor to Marlins Man.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, it's the blue, not the orange, and it's not a visor. But I was like, did this kid not get the memo? Like, or did they kind of cheat and shoot like fan crowds? At other games. Like, why is this kid there?
We've all been to enough baseball games to know that there are people that commit jersey fouls all the time.
This one's a pretty egregious one for the movie, especially because it's like in the opening minutes.
I agree, well, but
it's potential though that he may have a little league team, the Marlins, because Henry plays for the Pirates. That's his team that he plays for.
Right, there's the possibility, and obviously, like the hat itself is the Pittsburgh P. The shirts are like baseball, like long sleeve tees. Okay, so speaking of his outfit. Everyone else is dressed in full uniform. Why does Henry show up to the game in jeans?
Because he didn't expect to play. Because he's been a bench warmer the whole season.
He's hoping to get into the game. Wouldn't you like dress for the role you want, not the role you have? Isn't that the
thing?
That man.
Because it's at the end of the movie as well that he's playing in one of the Pirates games. And I'm sure they shot both of them at the same time, but he's in jeans in both, and it's like, Henry, come on. You know, even the kid with the, like, asthma showed up in the right uniform.
Just poor planning on Henry's part. You know, the guy's been a pro baseball player at the end of the movie and still can't get the uniform right.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Can we talk about how ridiculous the cast is? Not the cast, like, the people, but the plaster cast that they force this kid to wear with like the weird plaster belt that he's got on with the support railing going up to his arm.
Well, I mean, if they had to hold his arm up like that, then it would need that like brace from the elbow to like his midsection in order to keep it up like that because of the weight.
Right? But like you'd never ever cast an arm like that. I don't think you'd ever have to cast an arm like that, right?
I mean, I've seen
it has come a long way since then that people know that they shouldn't have done that, but
I guess.
Yeah, no, I've certainly seen like people with like the arm out, like extended from a break, right? Because if they're trying to set it so that it sets straight, you wouldn't bend it. But yeah. I mean, obviously it's a kid's movie. It's for like, you know, joking effect and the fact that like he gets these high fives and stuff like that, or it's sticking outside the car as they drive. But yeah, no, I mean, poor work on the doctor's part. Actually, the other thing I wanted to highlight about the doctor is, why did he allow the kid to bring his friends to the doctor appointment?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe for social comfort, right? Like if you're a doctor, I can't imagine, if a bunch of kids showed up to a doctor's appointment with, like if a kid showed up to a doctor's appointment with some of his friends, that the doctor would be like, no, sorry, you can't. I don't know. I mean, maybe he would, but I just have a hard time believing that a doctor would tell a kid that, like, no, sorry. Tell your kids to go away or your friends.
Well, it was certainly something I flagged on. I was like, what? I mean, I know the medical system is different in the States, but, like, I didn't know you get to bring, like, your mom and two buddies to the doctor's appointment.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
So, Diana, you mentioned you took some notes. Do you want to start with something that you kind of took note of or flagged from watching the movie?
Well, the three players that they highlight him throwing out in the middle of the game after he's joined the team, they've got Barry Bonds.
Skinny.
Skinny Barry Bonds, who was with the Giants at the time. Bobby Bonilla, who was with the Mets.
And, boy.
Who I think the Mets are still paying for, if I'm not mistaken. I think that contract is still on the books.
They continue to pay him. They pay him $1 million a year every single June 1st from now until 2031.
even though his last year of playing was in 2001. And Pedro Guerrero, who was with the St. Louis Cardinals. Yeah. And his last year actually was in 92, the year that they filmed that. And I'm not sure that he was really considered like an all-star because he's got a lifetime batting average of 219.
Oof, that's really bad.
So it's like they spent all their money on Bonilla and Bonds, and they're like, yeah, who can we get as the third guy? He'll cost as much as his batting average. Okay, let's get him.
Kind of crazy to think about Bonds actually doing this, right? Because the kind of image that we have of Bonds in our mind is very cantankerous and very anti-media. So for him to be in essentially a kid's movie in 1993 is just not how I remember Barry.
Yeah, no, this
is a non-speaking role.
Yeah, well, I mean, he mouths the words like about his stuff, when he strikes out. But it'd be like Charles Oakley being in Space Jam or something, right? Like,
God, that Charles Oakley should have been in Space Jam. That's a good pull. Can you think of anyone more monstrous than Oak? I can't. That's scary.
He's the original monster. I did flag all three of those players. I'm like, these are the actual players that they actually got. One of the players who's not an actual player, but he came up in our watch of Major League last week, is Neil Flynn, who plays Oaky, the first baseman.
Yes.
He was the janitor from Scrubs and has the bit part as a construction guy on Major League. So weird sort of piece of synchronicity. I hadn't realized that he crossed over between these two baseball movies.
Guy just likes to be in baseball movies, I guess.
Apparently.
I think the cast of this movie was actually pretty okay. Like, I'm not going to go and say like it's great or anything like that, but it's got some pretty big names in it, right? Like Gary Busey's in it, Daniel Stern's in it. Even though he's uncredited, John Candy is in it. Bruce Altman. Like it's got some dudes.
Dan Hedaya. I had forgotten that John Candy was the announcer.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, but uncredited, right?
Right.
I mean, I guess better for his career because nobody remembers that John Candy is part of it. But yeah, there he is.
Daniel Stern also directed it too. So.
Yes. This is, I think, the one movie he's directed. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, there was an Athletic piece not too long ago about the making of Rookie of the Year and talking to him about, you know, how he ended up doing this and the fact that he'd kind of had success at Fox with Home Alone and was offered this as a possibility. And I mean, his performance, it's very much in line with what he does in Home Alone with that like over the top like kids movie physicality, but I mean, it works, right? Like, I mean, he's ridiculous, but I laugh at, like, you know, when he locks himself in the cage when he's going to get his, yeah. It's like, you see it coming, like it's telegraphed, but at the same time, it's still just like, oh, of course. And that overhead shot of him between the two doors is fascinating. It's a fantastic shot.
He's always been kind of really good at that sort of comedy. And it's a shame that his career hasn't been better he hasn't had been many parts other than that because of it, right? Like he did a lot of voice acting after the Home Alone movies, right? Like he was the voice of Dilbert in the very poorly run Dilbert television show that ran in the late 90s, but other than that, like not really like a lot of big name stuff, which is kind of crazy because, you know, he was like, I would have thought he would have been a superstar after Home Alone.
Yeah, no, I mean, none of them became superstars. Like, Pesci went away from acting for quite a while. Stern, and then obviously Macaulay Culkin kind of had his issues. But, I mean, that's like a lot of, like, because he's beloved by, like, children who grew up with that movie, but that doesn't necessarily set you up for success as those kids age out of kids' movies, I suppose.
I guess that is fair.
The other name that I'd forgotten was associated with this movie until the score started playing was Bill Conti, who composed for Rocky, amongst other movies. And like, what a pull to get the guy who, like, you know, won the Academy Award for composing the theme from Rocky to do your like kids sports movie.
No kidding. That's I wonder how much that would have, maybe that's where they spent all the budget for this movie, right? Getting into Wrigley and then spending it on three baseball players and Bill Conti.
Yeah, that's why he's wearing jeans. It's like we couldn't afford a full.
Couldn't afford the full uniform.
No, exactly. But I do really like Bill Conti. Like he's done a few different great scores. But I'll tell you the whammy bar riff that they do when Rocket's arm goes in the big game.
Oh,
is tough. It's a tough musical choice.
It's is a little bit of a tough musical choice. Yep. Yeah. It's it has not aged particularly well.
Gary Busey during this movie was 49.
Oh wow! No wonder his arm went.
No kidding.
I don't know too many major league pitchers that are throwing heaters at 49.
He's
Rocket maybe.
He's surprisingly good in this movie. I kind of enjoyed his like warm-hearted gruff guy thing. Like he's got some charm to him.
Gary Busey is incredible. I think I love him in every single thing that I've ever seen him in. But this would have been, the run for him would have been Point Break, Under Siege, and then Rookie of the Year.
Wow, what a trio.
Right? None of those you could consider like proper good, but not only is he great in all those movies, but they all have cult followings and they're all good in their own way, right?
Yeah, no, that's totally true. Yeah, I was surprised by how much I enjoyed this movie. I mean, it's obviously a kids' baseball movie. And I don't know if it necessarily has the like kind of nostalgic appeal that The Sandlot does, which kind of has that much more of that like Halcyon Days thing. But it's fun. It's a fun movie.
You know, for movies that kind of came out, baseball movies that came out in that sort of 4 or 5 year stretch, it gets mentioned, I think, the least by about, and I don't, I think they're all pretty good, right? But it's in terms of how, what people usually mention, I'd say it's probably The Sandlot, and then you get Angels in the Outfield, and then Rookie of the Year is probably tied with Little Big League, right?
To me, this came across as more of a romantic comedy because it's more about the relationships than it is about baseball.
I think a lot of really good baseball movies are like that though, right? Because baseball itself is great, but I think it is very hard to sell a movie to audiences based solely just on the actual game itself. And so you do have to play on the interpersonal relationships in order to create a good baseball movie.
Yeah, it can't be pure baseball. And I mean, there's definitely, you know, there's the element of like his friends are excited for him, but then they get a little jealous and feel that he's neglecting them and stuff like that. Like they have like off field interpersonal stuff that they have to kind of like flesh things out, especially if they're limited with, you know, filming a lot of the baseball footage between two games of a doubleheader.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. And then they tried to build on the relationship between Henry's mom and Rocket.
Yes, and I mean, Henry's in the limo trying to, like, mix them club sodas and playing schmaltzy AOR for them.
It is a sweet relationship between him and his mom, though.
Yeah, it's an unusual, like, mom-son dynamic, right? Like, just kind of like she gives as good as she gets and is kind of, I don't know, say she treats him as an adult, but she doesn't, like, you know, baby him.
Yeah.
No,
she expects him to do his homework and she expects him to help out with the laundry.
Yeah, I mean, she's a good mom. She's a well-written mom.
And turns out she's got the secret floater.
Float it. Is there any world in which a major league hitter doesn't rip that?
Just annihilate that ball?
The moon. Like, I don't care if the kid's been throwing 100 miles an hour, if he comes in there with a slow pitch floater, that's going onto the street.
My only thought was like launch angle, maybe, like if he's kind of coming up under it, it's just like a giant pop fly or something, but
maybe I don't know. It is a hard sell.
Yeah, the fact that like comes down behind him after he's like expecting some like junk ball.
Well, how many guys used to strike out on knuckleballs?
Knuckleballs is a little bit different because of the movement.
Floaters can have movement too,
I guess.
We didn't get the like establishing shot, like from the perspective is entirely like the ball coming down and then the bat swinging through. We don't get like that wide angle shot to establish whether there was some like side to side movement on it or something.
Yeah. So I guess that is kayfabe. That I guess that's kind of fair. Mom, do you mind if I tell the story about the 2016 World Series Game 7?
It's better coming from you.
So. She had set up on the couch and to watch, obviously, Game 7 between Cleveland and the Cubs. And I was just kind of milling about the house. I think I'd come home from work, and it was in the third or the fourth inning. And, you know, I had been reading on Twitter that this was, like, you know, already one of the better World Series games that had happened. It you know, just kind of started, and it was full of action. It was very exciting. And you know, and the Cubs were up, and I came home, and all of a sudden, as soon as I started watching, Cleveland took the lead. And so, you know, my mom started getting a little suspicious, and I made a joke. I was like, oh, well, you know, like I can't be watching this, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't want to be a jinx. So I can't remember exactly what I did, but I went up and I got myself some food, and I wasn't really paying attention. I went off and did something else, and I came back. And just as I came back, Cleveland scored again to go up pretty late in the game. And at that point, my mom's like, get out. And I'm like, excuse me? She's like, you're bad luck. Go away. And so I did. I drifted away for a little bit. And I came back just in time to see the Rajay Davis home run.
Oh,
yeah, and at that point, it's full-on insurrection. My mom's like, you are not allowed to watch
out
any more of this game. You go away right now. And so I was just kind of like – and at that point, like, the internet was full-on like, this is the best World Series game that's ever happened. If you're not watching this, you're not a baseball fan. So I'm dying not watching this game. And I'm trying to catch glimpses of it and this and that. And finally, I resolved to just kind of watch in the game cast on ESPN. And, you know, I hear all the excitement when Zobrist hits that go-ahead double. And I come upstairs just to catch one last peek. And Cleveland puts a man on base. And my mom sees me. She's like, I'm not kidding. Go away. And I go back downstairs just in time for them to win. And she's, you know, excited and yelling and happy. And I come upstairs and I honest to God, I will never forget the image because it's the happiest I've ever seen her. it was late, you know, she had work the next day and it was without a doubt the happiest I'd ever seen her. She just had a blanket wrapped around herself and she was jumping up and down like she was a kid again. And it was incredibly heartwarming to see. I tried desperately to convince her to take time off to go to the parade, but she wasn't having any of it.
I'm kind of surprised she didn't make you like stand out on the like driveway or something.
If Cleveland had scored again, I would have not been allowed in the house.
He would have been sleeping in his car.
Yeah, I would have been. She would have told me to go to the car and not come back until the game was over.
Well, I'm grateful for both your sakes that they pulled it off.
Yeah, I spent a few pennies on swag off the MLB site afterwards. So.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, I mean, if you've waited your entire life for a world championship, you kind of want to wear the T-shirt or the hat that shows it,
and the shoes and the jacket and the flag and everything.
Oh, all of it. Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have Cubs socks like your son has Blue Jays socks?
No, I do have sneakers though.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, we both have the sneaker. Mine, I've got Vans. She's got Converse, but they're both of our teams.
Cool. You don't happen to have one of those Cubs troll dolls that they feature in the when they're rolling out the merch at the beginning of the movie?
No. But I did this last Christmas get a garden gnome.
Oh. Nice. I was surprised. I was like, oh, it's like we've waited this long that trolls are now back in fashion. There's like a trolls movie now that my kids are into. And
it's crazy, isn't it? You can actually buy the Cubs troll doll on Etsy for $21 Canadian.
Not that you weren't looking at something for Mother's Day.
No, I got her something nice. I don't think I'd get her a Cubs troll doll.
No, I'm okay without the troll doll. I have my gnome. I'm happy.
It's more functional.
I can share it with everyone.
Yeah.
No doubt. Any other random stray thoughts from the movie? Or?
Well, I just thought it was funny how the manager on the bench kept changing his name.
Mm.
And he called him Garden Hoser and Runamucker and Ruin Bruner and Rosenbagger. And the only time he called him Rowan Gartner was when he needed him to go out and actually win that final game.
Right. And then Henry's like, wait, what did he call me? Yeah, that actor, Albert Hall, who plays Sal, is he played Chief Phillips in Apocalypse Now, and he was Brother Baines in Malcolm X. He's a great character actor. He's one of those like classic that guys.
Yeah, he's definitely a that guy. Definitely a real Joey Pants.
The other guy that is definitely a that guy is Bruce Altman, who plays Jack, the boyfriend who becomes his manager. And tries to sell him to the Yankees with Dan Hedaya.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's just like a perfect heel in this movie, right down to that like 1993 like patterned silk shirt that he's wearing throughout.
Yes,
I love that. And I think Dad had one of those.
He did, and he gave it to me, and then the arm ripped off, so he turned it into a sleeveless silk patterned shirt.
Fancy, almost as fancy as that tiny Miata that he's trying to climb in and out of.
Yes, yeah. God, Miatas are such a villainous car. I mean, I don't want to catch heat from the thriving Winnipeg Miata community, but yeah, they're a villainous car.
Yeah, watch out, they're coming for you, man.
They are coming.
But there's like a couple like really good kind of like signifiers of like people's personalities in this movie. And that Miata is definitely one of them when you see him like struggling to get in and out of it, but he thinks he's so cool. It's just like, oh, you know, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. A real, real villain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good movie though. It's a lot better than I remember it being, you know, like I always kind of had it in my mind that it wasn't a good movie. But I, you know, it was a lot better and a lot more fun of a rewatch than I remember it being.
It's a fun, light movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. So I think 3 out of 3 would recommend. Diana, thanks very much for joining us here on the Bench Jockeys this week. Congratulations on your recent World Series championship. I know that you'll probably live off the high of that for a while.
Oh, a long time. Yes. Thank you very much for having me, guys.
All right, thanks, so next week, Brian's dad will be here to talk about the Yankees, who, and 1961. Billy Crystal directed that one, right?
Yes, he did. Billy Crystal directed it, and it's got Barry Pepper, probably in one of his only heroism roles.
Right on. Well, we'll give that one a rewatch. In the meantime, stick around for Front Burner here on 101.5 UMFM. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Strike 3, you're out.